Welcome to the Home Improvement Show. I'm Sue Smith, and I'm joined, as always, by Walter Assey. Good morning, Walter.
Hello.
Walter is the president of Renov Co. and has years and years. How many years, Walter, of experience?
30 years. I started very young, so I don't give away my age.
Okay.
I really started young.
Oh, we're going to dig into Walter here for a second. We do want your questions, though. 514-790-0800 is the number to call, and you can text on that same number, 514-790-0800, and you can, we like to hear your voice. So also, if you do have a question, don't wait until 5 to 10 or 5 minutes to the end of the show to ask it, because we will run out of time. So if you have a question, call us now, 514-790-0800. So can I ask you about how you started in renovation?
Sure, of course. I started, actually, it's funny because I stumbled into renovation by accident. I studied poli-sci in economics, did my master's in public administration and policy, and I was supposed to be a diplomat.
Of course.
Yes. But then I realized that this is not, civil service was not for me. It was too too boxed into, you know, certain tasks and time served and what have you. So I was just, you know, bored, looking to for another challenge. And I just stumbled into a job posting for a general contractor, estimator. And they would probably, you know, supply the training and everything else. And I started in that world and I fell in love with it and I never looked back.
That's so funny because you can't imagine two more different things.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know? But, you know, so many people, especially young people, are like, you know, looking for what they want to do. And I always say, like, you never know what's going to hit you, right? So it sounds like that. You were hit by a 2x4.
That's exactly what happened. I was struck by a 2x4. I never looked back.
And what did you like about it? Like,
you know, everything. Is yeah. Construction is such a beautiful, well, it's very stressful. It's not for everyone.
No.
You have to really know how to handle stress and be very good at handling stressful situations, because mistakes do happen, problems do happen. You are relying on a lot of moving parts, a lot of human parts as well. Human, you know, a lot of different trades, a lot of different personalities, you know, skill sets, coordination, logistics. So you have to be very regimental. You have to be very organized. You have to be very detailed. More importantly, you have to know what you're doing. Like, if you don't know the code, you know, if one thing I could say in the last 30 years, every time I see it, you know, I think I saw it all. I go to someone's house and I see something new that I can't believe my eyes that I just saw.
Yeah.
So it becomes really this type of, and then, you know, you get into it. It gets very addictive because you're transforming people's lives, right? You're transforming spaces. You're realizing people's dreams.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful industry.
It must be super, what's the word? Well, you get a sense of satisfaction. I mean, in the same way, you know, doing the dishes and cleaning the kitchen gives you satisfaction. Making something, you know, from scratch must give you a feeling of accomplishment, and then it's done and you can move on to the next thing.
100%. You go into, you know, situations where people that say have a small kitchen, or they have not enough bathrooms in the home, or they have all these different issues, and you are, you know, you are solving problems, you are bettering their life, you are, and then the before and after, till today, I can't, you know, it's an unbelievable feeling to step into something that is old and decrepit, and then come into a new space that's just been renovated, and smile of the people's faces.
Yeah.
Or even in a case where, you know, it's a bad story where you have a fire or a flood and, you know, people's lives have changed, and then you kind of bring it back from the ashes, really.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason all those renovation shows are so popular, you know, where they're like, come in with a sledgehammer, and then the big reveal, and the owners are like, oh, I mean, there's an entire channel, you know,
absolutely
dedicated to that now. It's funny, I have these two construction projects that have been going on in my neighborhood in alleys. Like, I've been walking by, and there are two people on two different streets that have been making backyard sheds. One of them has been finished. It's painted. It's gorgeous. The other one is still, you know, got holes everywhere. It's half done. So I think it also reflects perhaps the owner's personalities.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Absolutely. And that's one thing you have to do is adapt to people's tastes and personalities and expectations. And also their decision-making process. Some people like to procrastinate and wait forever to do things. And others jump on it, you know, head and feet, right? Yeah.
All right, a little bit of digging down into Walter Assey, and the phone lines are ringing, 514-790-0800. We do have lots of people up on the lines, and Walter, we've been warning you now for 2 weeks in a row. Finally, we're going to get to Elizabeth, who has a question about mice. Good morning, Elizabeth. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Good morning. What's your question?
Yeah, my question is, how do you deter mice from coming into the house? Because I've tried plugging up the holes. I've even set traps. I set the live trap. They don't even go near it. So I'm just wondering if there's anything better besides killing them.
There are many different things. You have the mice first. Do you have them 12 months per year, or it's mostly late fall and winter?
Well, usually, I've never had them in the summer before, but I'm having them now.
Okay.
And usually it's winter time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's start.
Not very often.
Yeah, so usually you're right. Usually they look for warmer spaces in the winter. Like late fall, they start looking and they find their way through, different areas. Believe it or not, cracked plumbing as well. So if you have any infrastructure that's cracked underneath the slab.
They can get into anything.
They could get into anything. Yeah. That's exactly it. And you'll be shocked how small of a hole they need to get in.
No, I realize that.
Mm-hmm. So, first of all, let's start with the traps. When you're setting those traps, where are you putting them?
Well, I'm putting them right beside my stove because where the outlet is,
mm-hmm.
or the plug is, there's a hole there. I put steel wool, and also I put some, it's called grate stuff,
mm-hmm.
around the plug, and they still manage to get through.
Yeah. So where you want to put the traps, if you are setting traps, you want to put them along the wall because mice have very bad vision, so they tend to walk really very close to the walls.
That's why they do that? I never knew that. Because they can't see?
Yeah.
Three blind mice.
That's right. That's exactly it. So if you want to set a trap, if it's anywhere not close to a wall, it's useless. Let's begin with that. Second of all is the obvious thing, which is going around and plugging every possible entry point, which you said that you have done. And then, and specifically entry points that are close to the earth, meaning if you have an area of your land that is, a bit hilly and it's like it's earth touching the brick, and then you have those weeping holes that are not plugged, plugged with grills, not plugged with concrete, because that's a big mistake. Okay. Then they will go through that as well. What I found that works very well, believe it or not, is it's like a device that you plug into a power outlet, and it have that sends those frequencies.
Oh,
you can't hear it, but the mice hear it, and then that actually makes them wanna leave the property because they don't like. Sorry.
It's not that cheap.
It's actually very affordable. Very affordable.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, and it actually works.
I've seen them, but I wasn't sure how well they worked.
They actually do work very well. Specifically, you want to put them in the areas where you see the most amount of mice. And if it's a big area, you need to plug more than one of these devices. But they actually work very well. The other thing that works... instead of the traps itself is a feeder. So it's food that they eat. They go through it, and then they don't die right away, but they eventually would die as well.
I know, but I've got a cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that,
I'm with you,
that's,
Elizabeth.
That's right. So I will try. I will try definitely the frequency plugin, and okay. That should do the trick for you.
Okay, let's hope so.
Okay, good luck, Elizabeth. I'm going to try that as well. So that's Elizabeth. Finally, we got to the mouse question. If you have a question for Walter Assey, give us a call, 514-790-0800. This is the Home Improvement Show. Hello and welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. I'm Sue Smith and I'm here with Walter Assey, and we are answering your questions about renovations and lots of other stuff like mice. Lots of comments on the text line about mice, Walter, but we're going to give it a rest for a minute because lots of other questions are coming in too. Don't forget, you can call us or text us at 514-790-0800. Give us a call. We like to hear your voice, but we've got lots of texts as well. 514-790-0800. Hi, Walter. This texter says, how many CFM do I need for an under cabinet ducted range hood? We cook a lot of Asian food, oils, spices, etc. Is over 400 CFM overkill for a lower triplex apartment kitchen?
So to answer that question properly, we also look at the span from the exhaust fan origin all the way to the exterior wall. If it's a long span with a lot of bends, then it's definitely not an overkill. Okay. So anything that exceeds, let's say, two bends as an exhaust to the outside, I would even start with that as my minimum strength as far as CFM is concerned.
If you're in an apartment, how do you know how many bends?
Well, I mean, typically you would know, because what you want to look for is where your exterior exhaust, right? So if your register, if you know it's, you know, that we have a bend going up and then a bend going 90 degrees to go to a certain area in the home, then you kind of guesstimate how we got there, right? Mm-hmm. Usually it's a straight line. It's very seldom that, you know, a contractor would purposely have other bends. So they're very, a good contractor is very mindful of that, so they pre-plan it. So the bends is one thing, because you are losing efficiency at every bend. And the other thing is the span, the length from right. that point to where you go out. So I would not say it is. I mean, just make sure it's quiet. And if something that, if you feel that you need to go with a stronger unit, there are a lot of units that have the motor on the outside, which is even more preferable, because the noise now becomes just, happens only on the outside rather than the inside of the home.
The outside of the home?
Correct.
And it's not subject to getting frozen?
They're usually waterproof, watertight, made to be made on the put on the exterior. So that's a good thing about them. Mm-hmm. And it's very practical, because it can really get very noisy if you have a powerful engine embedded in your motor inside the home.
Okay, there you go. That's a question from the text line for Walter, 514-790-0800. And we're going to go to the phone lines right now, 514-790-0800. We've got a caller with a question about plumbing. Hello.
Hi.
What's your question?
Okay, so I don't know where to start. This is very long. I recently had the hot water tank, which was gas, mm-hmm. changed. It was removed. And the electric tank put into the garage. Then the pipes were reconnected. After that had happened, whenever I flush the toilet, I have a split level. Whenever I touch the toilet on the upstairs and turn on the hot water tank, there's rattling in the pipes.
Okay.
What could be causing that?
Most probably you have what you call a water hammering. So it's either, so it's really, it's one toilet, right?
Well, there's two. There's the water hammering, when I looked up online, is a big bang in the pipe. This one rattles.
It's not necessarily just a big bang. No, a big bang. So yeah, it could be a big bang or it could be shaking, right?
Right.
Water hammering would happen. One of the things you want to do is look into the shut-off valve of your toilet. close it, open it, maybe look into the washer, and because sometimes a dislodged washer will cause that to happen. Okay?
Right.
If not, then the second thing you should do is a water hammer arrester.
Okay.
That you would install.
So I'll tell you what has happened. I've had a water meter installed.
Okay.
So the gentleman drained all of the pipes, had to drain them all to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't stop it. I put arresters in on the washer and the dryer and on the pipe. I thought it was causing it, which is the toilet pipe. That didn't stop it. I drained the hot water tank. That didn't stop it. So I'm not sure what else to do.
Did you check the check valve on the toilet?
The check valve?
Yeah.
What's that?
The shutoff valve.
That, so that could be defective, you're saying? Because that
could be defective. It could be just
the
washer.
The toilet.
Sorry?
That could be defective.
That could be
defective. When you turn that, you can shut off the water from going into the tank.
Correct.
So and open. So that works.
Yes, but I mean, if you have an issue with that, whether it's a dislodged washer or anything like that, it might cause that vibration as well.
Okay.
So I would check into that before calling a plumber.
Okay.
And what you could do also is just simply as a first test is shut it off and then put it back on again. Because sometimes it's partially open, partially closed. It could create that issue for you as well.
I've done that. It's because we were away on vacation and I turned that off to shut it completely off, then put it back on, and it, the problem is still there. But I'll try looking at
it. What you could also try to do is kind of reset the system. So shut off the water, open all the pipes.
Right.
Then open up the water and then do that flushing of the system again. And that also might assist.
Yeah, done all that.
You've done that. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. Then I would look at the shut off valves then.
Okay.
Okay. If that doesn't work, unfortunately, a plumber is in your future.
Might have to look at it. Okay.
It sounds like he's done a lot, though.
Yeah. He's actually done a lot more than, you know, someone else, that's for sure.
Yeah, I would have called a plumber a lot before that, so good for you.
Two more things that you do, then you can officially become a plumber, a certified plumber.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call, NTS.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. You can also call Walter if you have a question. The number is 514-790-0800. That's the same as the text line, but we do like to hear your voice. And also, as you just heard, Walter likes to ask follow-up questions. So give us a call if you have a home renovation question. 514-790-0800. This is the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. I'm Sue Smith, and I'm here with Walter Assey. Hello again, Walter.
Hello.
Walter is here to ask your questions about your home renovation. 514-790-0800 is the number to call. And you can also text us, 514-790-0800. Let's go to the text line, Walter. And this is from Ivan. Yesterday, my toilet was leaking from around the base. I have silicone going around from the front like a horseshoe, but not in the back. I couldn't figure out where the water was coming from. Could it possibly be the seal? I checked all the water connections. There were no leaks. Any ideas, Walter?
So, I might confuse them a bit more with my answer. I don't like to put caulking around the toilet. Because if the wax seal or the toilet itself is leaking, it tends to pool the water more than prevent the leakage.
And then right? You don't see in time.
Voila. Mm-hmm. You don't see in time. And what is going to happen is just going to rot the plywood. And mm-hmm. It's not usually nice things that are leaking out of the toilet, as you may imagine. So you technically, I prefer that. You don't put caulking around the toilet. I prefer that you keep it open. What a major, a very common mistake is when people are, when the people change their toilets, they don't change the wax seal. They don't know that this have a time limit to it. And usually, you know, a shelf life of a wax seal is anywhere between 7 to 10 years. So if you have a 20-year-old toilet that have never moved, then chances are your wax seal is dried up, yeah. Right? And that eventually will cause problems, right? So yeah, definitely don't look at the caulking. Caulking is not really going to help you. You know, caulking does not really help in any type of water damage. It's what we call the bubble gum of all solutions, right? what you want to really rely on is what's, you know, what's preventing that water from leaking. So definitely take out that toilet, look into the wax seal, and yep, then change it, and then install it back.
So this actually recently happened to me this summer. I had had my toilet, well, I'd had the floor redone, and so they took the toilet off, and they put another seal on top of the old seal, and it ended up leaking. So we had to take it up again and do all that. But you and I were talking in the break about some jobs you can do yourself, some jobs you should call a professional. I'm wondering, on behalf of Ivan, is this something you think Ivan could do, is take the toilet off and replace the seal? Also, how do you tell if the seal is good or not?
I mean, again, it's usually, well, I mean, in his case, there's telltale signs it's leaking, but again, it's age, right? So if you know that your toilet is 20 years old, 15 years old, you haven't changed it, there's no question that the seal have to be changed, right? And don't, like you said, don't put a seal on top of a seal. That doesn't work, right? It's like putting caulking on top of caulking. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You clean it up. You make sure that it's materials that have to glue on each other. So mm-hmm. every time you have a dirty surface or a surface that is not well prepared, it's not going to happen. So it's a problem waiting to happen. Cutting corners in renovations in general, you might save a buck today, but I guarantee you, you're going to pay 10 or 20 or 100 times that in the future. And we see it all the time, right? So wax seal is really, it's a time limit. It's like even shutoff valves. Like what most people don't understand is that everything have, for example, manufacturer of shutoff valves, they give you a 5-year window mm-hmm. or a 5-year warranty mm-hmm. on the part. It's, you know, usually there is every item have an expiry date, right? So the regular maintenance is important. You know, why,
I mean,
do
you're
you
supposed
have to wait?
Change your shutoff valves every five
well,
years?
No,
Walter.
What I'm saying is most manufacturers will tell you this is a recommendation.
Right.
And anybody do it? Very few people would. But if your shutoff valves are 30 years old.
Yeah.
Do you think you should really push that envelope? I mean, you could try for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, make sure you have good insurance. I mean, it's just, these are the preventative things yeah. that you could do and you should do. Like you do a checkup, a medical checkup once a year. Why does your home have to only endure a checkup after a major disaster happens?
Because if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, I mean, that's really the wrong mentality when it comes to maintenance. It's like in your car, you hear that little rattling noise and you say, okay, well, you know, the car starts, it's good, it's fine. And then all of a sudden that noise that could have been, you know, solved by with $10, it's going to cost you a yeah. new engine.
Yeah.
Same concept applies to a home on many levels. And we see that a lot.
I bet you do.
We see that a lot. We see that often. And, you know, people have a water damage. They look at it. They watch it. They say, well, it dried up now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But this is, you know, this came from your toilet. So what do you think that water, yeah. you know, came with, right? And then the air quality becomes an issue. And then they start seeing mold. And then, you know, what could have been solved with a simple opening in the drywall, it's going to be a lot more complicated to fix.
All right. Okay. Words of wisdom from Walter. Guys, stay on top of your renovations and stay on top of your home maintenance and also go to the doctor and the dentist, right? We have to do all that stuff. No, it's true. Okay. Still got a lot of mice stuff, but let's go to another question on the text line. By the way, that number again, 514 790-0800. You're listening to the Home Improvement Show and Walter Assey. Here's a question on the text line. Hi, Walter. Question for you about all these new pool rules coming up in September. Do you know if it's legit to have an automatic sliding door closer for a couple of dollars rather than building 48-inch railings and such around a deck? Question from Mark in Lachine. Do you understand the question?
I don't think I understand the question, but I think what he's referring to, if you are fenced in and you have a self-closing door,
right?
There has been some modification to the law, which is an awesome thing, because I found that the new law that they came up with was really not very smart. A lot of people had already fences
around their
home,
backyards, yeah,
and they wanted them to put a second layer of fencing.
Yes.
And then even with that, at one point they wanted the fence to be about 40 inches away from the pool, but most people's borders were 36 inches.
Yeah.
So people had to actually invest money in creating new borders, which really was not, anyways, they end up modifying things when people were complaining. But yeah, if you have a self-closing unit, meaning, and it's really a thing for, you know, for babies, for kids. So if you have it like a deck that have a self-closing door to the pool, then you don't need to install a fence around the pool.
But can't the door open if it also can close?
Well, if it's it have to have a shut-off mechanism, right?
Right.
The idea is you could also open a door of a fence.
Right.
To access your pool. So it's that type of what they want to ensure. If it's a little baby, they can get to the pool.
Of course. Okay, so you're saying, yes, that could be a possibility.
That could be a possibility, if I understood the question.
Okay. All right, you are listening to the Home Improvement Show on CJD. We've got lots of texts on the text line, and also a couple of calls coming in, 790-0800, 514-790-0800. Just going to read a couple of mice texts, and then we'll go and take a little break, because just to follow up. This texter says, another tip for mice is to put your mouse trap in a milk container. They love tunnels, and it's easier to dispose of them after. That's from Abby. And somebody else says, hi, Walter. The plugs are amazing. I've been using them for ages because I have a phobia of them. All right, so there you go. That's it for the mouse conversation for today. We're going to talk about...
I feel like Mickey Mouse.
I make no promises. We have a question about completely demolishing a bathroom. Walter on the text line, and we will get to that in just a minute. You are listening to The Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Sue Smith with you, and Walter Assey is here to answer your questions. Of course, we got lots of calls and texts as we near the end of the show, so we're going to try to get to them all. Let's start with your phone. Rosemary's on the line. Hello, Rosemary.
Oh, hello.
Hello. You have a question about a backflow prevention valve.
Yes, that's right. My basement, the exit point for the drainage system is at the front of the house, but the stack is at the back of the house. I'm just wondering where they would have to put in the backflow prevention thing. And also, do you have any recommendations about the way that the valve works? Either it hangs or it comes up from the bottom. There's two versions, apparently.
So just to kind of give you, which area do you live in, Rosemary?
In Pointe-Claire.
Okay, because the way it works with backflow valves is it's all going to boil down to what you have as fixtures in the basement. So do you have a bathroom? Do you have a washer-dryer?
No, I've only got my hot water tank down there in terms of water.
Do you have a drain, floor drain?
There's a little floor drain next to the water tank, but... there's never been any other water system downstairs.
Do you have a sump pump?
I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I do. No, okay. I do. It's very close to where the water exits the house.
Okay. And the sump pump, does it pump to the outside or it pumps into the city?
It does. And I've never been able to get the city to tell me where the water actually goes, because I presume they knew when the house was built they must have had the plans.
Okay. So just in a nutshell, I mean, usually, for example, that floor drain in the hot water tank room, you would need to have a backflow valve installed on that drain as well. So it's called the branches, right? Now, if you were to install a water backflow valve into the main, number one, you want to ensure that the city allows it, because not every city allows it. A lot of them now are starting to allow it to be installed on the main, but that have to be what we call toujours ouvert. So it's always open. A backflow valve that is always open, that only shut off in case it detects a backflow from the city sewers.
That's right. Well, okay. We're required to put one in, apparently.
We're required to put a backflow valve in. Now, where you put it in, depending on the municipalities. Now, even if you put one on the main, you still have to put on the branches. Meaning, if you have a drain in the basement, you would have to install one on the drain. If you have a washer-dryer, usually the washer, you install one, it's usually inside the wall, so it's not coming from the floor like the drain pipes or anything like that. Now, anything that is coming from the drains, you're breaking the concrete, it has to come from the floor, you have no choice.
So it is at the front of the house where the drainage system leaves, it would be one valve covering everything.
It will be one valve covering everything, but you still need to have one on the branches, and I'm going to explain you why. So let's say, hypothetically speaking, you do have a sewer backup, and you are using the water in your house. So that flapper is going to open, right? So if any water backs up, it needs to be able to be blocked somewhere else, which is in the branches. That's why we usually, if you're installing on the main, we recommend that you install on the branches as well.
That sounds very expensive, having to put two in.
Not really, because the one that you do, I mean, the one that you put on the main is different than the one that you put on the branches. It's smaller, right? The one on the branches is a smaller thing, so it's not as expensive. But I mean, Rosemary, when you're looking at this, you're not looking at cost. You're looking at doing this properly. Mm-hmm. You do this once. I mean, you know, unless what you do is you install it on the main and then make sure not to use the water during the storm.
That's right.
Which, you know, which...
Do you have a particular model of valve that you'd recommend?
There are many different ones. There are the goods, the bads, and the uglies. There's not really... there are some that I don't recommend, but I won't name on air so I don't get sued. But, you know, we can have, you know, once you have the consultation, you'll be told which one is recommended, really. Because some of them tend to be more...
I've had bad luck with plumbers, unfortunately, and that's why I'm asking somebody who's, I feel, reliable.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, look, it's there are a few that we actually like. They've been tried, tested, and true. You know, and that's what we will recommend. Always be mindful as well. That's something that's very important. Backflow valve is not just about installing one and forgetting about it. Every 6 months, it needs to be maintained. It needs to be cleaned, because you do have a gasket. You want to make sure that have a good, nice seal. You want to make sure you don't have a debris around it. We've seen so many people that got flooded, and they do have backflow valves. And, you know, you ask them, when was the last time you got that cleaned? And they look at you as if, you know, you're speaking Chinese. And they say, what do you mean? It has to be cleaned. If you don't clean it, it's useless.
So do you clean it?
So the plumbers, when they come, they're going to give you a bit of a little training. It's really not difficult to do. What you want to make sure is the flapper itself gets cleaned around the gasket. So you just, you know, even if you pass a little rag around it, WD-40 to ensure that the mechanism works well, so it's to have it lubricated properly. It's not really a difficult process, but do ask the plumber to show you how to have it clean after you install it. And if you don't have, if you have one, get it inspected. A lot of cases we're seeing that the flappers are broken; they don't work anymore, or they're jammed shut, or they're jammed partially open. So, you know, maybe have the plumber check the system for you, put it back into, press the reset button, make sure everything is working properly, and, you know, be ready for the next one.
Thank you.
All right, Rosemary. Sounds like she's got her work cut out for her. That is Rosemary calling in. We're speaking.
Everybody does. So, I mean, right now, the insurance companies and the cities are asking for you to install your backflow valve.
Yes.
So it's not like, I mean, I know a lot of people are still like in denial about this, but it's a thing. It's going to happen. And look over your renewals of your insurance policies, because a lot of them are getting, you know, when we get a renewal, we tend to just look at the price. We don't look at the
details
inside.
Yeah.
So in a lot of cases, the insurance company are saying, okay, we're renewing you, but if you don't have a backflow valve in your policy, you're not covered for sewer backup or any type of water damage in your basement, right?
Right.
You haven't seen it, you haven't read it. So just make sure to read. If you're not sure, call your insurance, call your broker, make sure that you have that coverage, specifically if you don't have a backflow valve. If you don't have a backflow valve, install one, because I'm sure you get probably a better price if you are insured, if the insurance companies know that you have a backflow valve, and it will protect you against flooding.
Yeah. So do it anyway. But what does it cost you to get a plumber in to do a backflow valve?
I mean, it depends. It depends on how many branches, because we talked about the branches and the things, but anywhere between $1,500 to $3,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're basically saying then you have to have the plumber in every 6 months to clean it?
No. You can clean it yourself. Just get but you have to have it cleaned approximately every 6 months.
Okay.
But it's easy to clean. You can do it yourself.
All right. And you got to change the flow valves to the toilet every 5 years?
No. It's recommended that you, they're usually warranted for 5 years, but you know, typically you should, I would say, replace them at least once every 10 years.
All right. Maintenance, maintenance, maintenance. That's the message today from the Home Improvement Show. Walter, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Sorry to all the texters that we did not get to. Try your luck next week. This has been the Home Improvement Show. Don't forget, you can go to the Renovco site and press the Ask Walter button, and you can get your question in that way. If it is a burning question, Walter says he does try to get to them as often as possible. And Walter, we'll see you here next week.
Okay.